Let's go to Nehemiah this evening. We'll turn our Bibles over there for a few minutes. The book of Nehemiah. I ran across, before we get into Nehemiah, as you're turning there, I ran across a very interesting article, and I printed it out. It's on the table in the hallway, and it's entitled The Long Road Home. And let me precursor this, states here, just as some portions of the Bible that deal with humanity's sin, this article contains adult themes. Although we endeavor to tell Flavio's story with discretion, it may not be suitable for all readers. And what we have here is a story of a man in South America who transitioned to a woman and then tells his story of how he came to know the Lord as his Savior and transitioned back. So that's available on the table in the hallway there. And you might say, that's a terrible story. It is, but it's a story of God's grace. And I think sometimes we have to be made aware of that as the church progresses on in the days that we live in, more and more we're going to have people that will abuse their God-made bodies for their own purposes or whatever they think their purposes are. And those people need to be saved. And so there's just a couple-page story there about Flavio's story. And he actually wrote a book afterwards telling his story. The PDF is free, so you can read of that account. Lived in South America, went to Spain, and quite a story. It's a good story. It doesn't indulge in this was my sinful life, but it does describe that definitely misuse and abuse that took place in order for a person to go in a direction that is definitely not the way God made the man, made this person, and how God saved them from their sin and turned them around. And so every once in a while, and that wasn't something I went looking for, it was something that came across my desk, and Lord willing, if that's something that you may say, hey, I need to learn, not that we need to learn about sinful things, but we need to learn how to love people and bring them to Jesus Christ, that's for sure. So a little thought there. We started last week with Nehemiah here, chapter 7, and we looked at here wisdom from above. And we saw here that Nehemiah had definitely was given some wisdom by the Lord. And we look here in Nehemiah chapter 7 where it says, now it came to pass when the wall was built and I had set up the doors and the porters and the singers and the Levites were appointed, that I gave my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, charge over Jerusalem. For he was a faithful man and feared God above many. And I said unto them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun be hot. And while they stand by, let them shut the doors and bar them, and appoint watchers of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, every one in his watch, and every one to be over against his house. Now the city was large and great, but the people were few therein, and the houses were not builded. And my God put into mine heart to gather together the nobles and the rulers and the people, that they might be reckoned by genealogy. And I found a register of the genealogy of them which came up at the first, and found written therein. And so we find here that the first thing that we saw from point number one there, we saw that Nehemiah wisely appointed new leaders. And this was for Jerusalem here. And we found under letter A, we had Hanani. He had been chosen here as one of these leaders. And then under letter B, we had Hananiah. And so we had a dual leadership here that was taking place. And then we saw in verse number 3, we saw point number 2, that Nehemiah wisely advised new guards. Not only did he appoint leadership, but then he put in some guards that were there. And the first thing he did with these guards there in verse number 3 is that he had some gatekeepers. And we were looking there at the fact that we have to guard things in our own lives. We need to remember that that we need to have gates, we need to have the ability to discern things. And then under letter B, we find there, the next thing that was there is that there were city guards. Not only were there gatekeepers, but now we find that there were the appointed city guards to take place here as well. And if we can say this here, we can find that this is the institution of the first neighborhood watch community. And they were watching for their own people, and they were taking great care of them. So let me say that as parents, you must set up some guards for your families. As teenagers and young people and young adults, we must set up some guards for your lives. As believers, we must set up some guards for our families, for our local church, that we must preach and teach against sin and in favor of holy, righteous living. There in your notes, we have 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 12 and 13, where he says, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine." And so he said there, we need to be an example and not allow people to just despise us, but to know why we do what we do, setting up some guards. And then in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, he says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier." Very important that we understand that, as we've seen with the armor of God on Sunday nights, that we're in a spiritual battle. In Titus 2 verse 1, he says, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." We have to know what we believe and then be able to teach about those things. So we have to set up some guards. In Proverbs chapter 4 verse 23, it tells us that we need to keep our heart, for out of it, we find that it needs to be kept there, because for out of it are the issues of life. I'm thinking here. I don't have it written in front of me. One second here. In Proverbs chapter 4, I know where it is, chapter 4 and verse number 23, he tells us there to keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And that word keep there is that type of word where it's kept, and it's in a good sense. It's a positive sense. He's not saying you have a problem. He's saying, no, keep those things, guard those things, watch over them. When we think about our lives and we think about things that are important to us, what can we name some things or areas in our lives that need guarding? When we think about things that we need to guard, what comes to mind? What are areas or things in our lives that we as Bible-believing Christians need to guard and to really protect? What can you think of here tonight? What's coming to mind? Anybody? Get you to think here a little bit. What are you thinking of, Ellen? Yes. So we have to, as Job said, "I made a covenant with mine eyes." So we're guarding our eyes. We just can't look at whatever we want to, whenever we want to, can we? And it's very important. My eyes belong to the Lord. What am I looking at? That's very good. Guarding that. Any other thoughts? What is it that we need to guard? Yes.
Keep your tongue from evil.
Oh boy, keep your tongue from evil. That's a very good one as well. And how easily I can get myself in trouble when I don't guard my tongue. Our speech is very important. That's very good. What else do we need to guard? What else might you think of? Yes. Now you're thinking, yes, the next one naturally is, what are we listening to? Can I listen to the music of this world and be brought unto God? No, you can't do it. And there may be other Christians, people that profess to be Christians, that will say, yeah, I can listen to whatever I want to. No, you can't. You can't put in garbage and get purity out, right? I don't think any of you, if you came to my house, just a minute, we're going to have supper. Let me go look in my garbage can, and I'll go get us some food. You'd say, I would just kind of tiptoe out the front door while you're going out the back. I don't want to eat that. Why? We would say, you don't put garbage in and get something good out of it. It doesn't happen. And so the things that we put in our ear gate, our eye gate, what's coming out of our tongue, is very, very important. So you see there are things that need guarding in our lives. And here's Nehemiah. He's saying something similar, only here it was a physical guarding. He says we need to set this up over the city. The third thing that we see, point number three there, Roman numeral number three, is that Nehemiah wisely arranged a new population. And that goes from verse number 4 all the way to verse 73 at the end of the chapter. He wisely arranged a new population. And this is quite interesting. I will just tell you right up front, this would offend most people. This would offend most people. But I think what's happened here is God has the hearts of the people, and the people have already invested themselves back into Jerusalem. They're in that place where if Nehemiah would have done this first before rebuilding the wall, I think that it would have had a whole different outcome. Because you read about this and you're like, wow, this is something else. Because according to verse number 4, Jerusalem's population was sparse following the rebuilding project. It says in verse number 4, but the people, city was large and great, but the people were few therein. The houses were not builded. And most of the workers from outside of the city, they'd gone home. Some scholars estimate that Jerusalem itself covered about 260 acres. So this is just over 1 square kilometer. Can you envision 1 square kilometer?
Erickson.
Okay. Basically the size of Erickson. You've got it. Okay. So that's the entire size of the city of Jerusalem at this time. And now I'm just going, again, by what some scholars have estimated. We don't have anything in the Bible saying exactly how big it was. But now that we've got this, God led Nehemiah to take a registry of the Jews who had returned to Judah. Now we have the exact same registry for us in Ezra chapter 2. It's the very same thing. You'll find the same names, same people. And as he arranges this new population, he does this several ways. Letter A, it's by communities. Communities that he puts together here from verse number 4 all the way to verse number 38. And we find two things there. We find the descendants of Parosh and 17 other families that go from verse number 8. He mentions there the children of Parosh, 2,172, and the children of Sephatiah. And he goes all the way down to verse number 25. And he names Parosh and 17 other families. And then secondly, we have the families of Bethlehem and 12 other communities. Beginning at verse number 26, the men of Bethlehem and Netophah and 108, the men of Anathoth, 120 and 8. He goes all the way down to verse number 38, the children of Sena, 3,930. And so he mentions all these families of Bethlehem and 12 other communities. So it's by families, then by these communities that are put together here, and he mentions them all by name. Then under letter B, not only does he mention communities, now he mentions vocations. What was it that they did? And from verse 39 all the way down to verse number 66, he mentions these vocations. And I've listed them there for you. The first ones being the priests in verse number 39 through verse number 42. And then we have the Levites in verse number 43. The Levites, the children of Jeshua, of Kadmiah, the children of Hodabah, 70 and 4. And then we have verse 44, we have the singers, the children of Asaph. And we know that those had been appointed by David during his reign. And so those descendants are listed there. Then we have number 4, there are the porters in verse number 45, the children of Shalom. And he mentions their heads of their households there, 130 and 8. The temple servants from verse 46 all the way down to verse number 56. And there he mentions the Nethinims and the others that are mentioned there all the way down to verse number 56, and the children of Neziah and the children of Haphtephah. And then in verse number 57, we have number 6, they're the descendants of Solomon's servants. And that goes all the way down to verse number 60. And then in verse 61, we notice there, here's very interesting, 61 and 62, there are those without a heritage. And these were they which went up also from Telma, Tel-Harasha, Cherub, Adon, and Immer, but they could not show their father's house nor their seed whether they were of Israel. The children of Dalia, the children of Tobiah, the children of Nekoda, 642. And then, so he's showing those without a heritage. I thought that was interesting. Tobiah is mentioned in there. Wasn't he the guy they shared all the good news about back at the end of chapter 6? So now when he gets down to the nitty-gritty, there are little issues there. So there were those without a heritage. And then verse 63 through 65, there were the unqualified priests. And the priests, the children of Habia, the children of Koz, children of Barzillai, which took one of the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadite, to wife, and was called after their name. These sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but it was not found. Therefore, they were as polluted, put from the priesthood. And the Tirshatha, that's Nehemiah, said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with Urim and Thummim. And so we have these unqualified priests. So this emphasized here the need for purity amongst God's leaders. And he's showing this, that they need to be able to show this. And of course, it mentions the Urim and the Thummim. And of course, we don't have a lot of information as to what that is, but that was two stones that the high priest had in his garment, and they were used there to know the will of God in matters that they were unclear about. I believe the reason that the Urim and the Thummim are not given clear instruction as to what they were is because, and this is my own personal opinion, but I'll give it to you anyway, we would just have a whole bunch of copycats today. And what do we do today when we need to know God's will? Number one, we pray, and then we seek His word, and we seek counsel, and we find out from the Lord what He wants us to do. We don't need to go to a high priest with a couple of stones. I mean, that was God's plan at that time, but here He is saying that's what they would have to do in order to find out where they were at. So He gives them that. So that's a total there in verse number 66. The whole congregation together was 42,303. So 42,360, and that's the same number given in Ezra chapter 2 and verse number 64. So Ezra chapter 2 and those genealogies match up with exactly the same thing that Nehemiah was dealing with here as well. And then in verse number 67 down through 69 under letter C, we have the servants, singers, and livestock. And he mentions this beside their manservants and their maidservants, of whom there were 7,337. They had 245 singing men and singing women, their horses 736, their mules 245, their camels 435, 6,720 asses. And so he goes through these numbers, and what do we see there from these servants, singers, and livestock is that everyone and everything was important. Nehemiah is taking stock of everything. It's not that, oh, some are not important. No, they're there. And then we have these last verses here from verse 70 down to verse 73. And what we find there under letter D is financial investment. This is also quite amazing because this genealogy, you would say, this could have really offended some people, especially those who had been, wait, you can't serve in the priesthood until we figure this out. Some of you, you can't find your genealogy. But what we find happening here is there's a financial investment takes place in verse 70, and some of the chief of the fathers gave unto the work. The Tirshatha, that's the governor, which is Nehemiah, gave to the treasurer 1,000 drams of gold, 50 basins, 530 priest garments. And some of the chief of the fathers gave to the treasurer of the work 20,000 drams of gold and 2,200 pounds of silver. And that which the rest of the people gave was 20,000 drams of gold and 2,000 pounds of silver, 67 priest garments. So the priests and the Levites and the porters and the singers and some of the people and the Nethinims and all Israel dwelt in their cities. And when the seventh month came, the children of Israel were in their cities. So he shows us this. He talks about their financial investment. And you have a few points there. Number one, the Tirshaner, the governor, is Nehemiah. He gives 1,000 drams of gold. Now, 1,000 drams of gold is 19 pounds of gold. Now, I don't know what that is in today's money. 3,000 an ounce today? Wow. And there's what, 16 ounces to the pound?
31 grams to a troy ounce.
Okay. Convert it to metric first and then over to dollars. So, yeah. Anyway, he had a truckload of money. Obviously, there's a lot here. He also 50 basins and 530 priest garments. Now, we don't know exactly what these basins are, but I believe that was used here. If I understand this correctly, these were used for washing for the priests. And then the priest garments, of course, they had different garments for different priests serving at different times. Some were high priestly garments. Those were very expensive with the breastplate, with 12 precious stones. And so you had those kind of things, plus you had other garments that they wore. Then we had, secondly, the chief of the fathers. They gave 20,000 drams of gold there in verse number 71. So they gave 380 pounds of gold. And also 2,200 pounds of silver.
$40 an ounce.
$40 an ounce for silver.
Would you say gold was 3,000?
3,000.
Okay. Really roughly.
Roughly. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm behind the curve. I was thinking gold was like $1,200 or $1,500 an ounce. So I obviously have not kept up.
$834,000
worth of gold.
So, you know, he got that from his previous boss?
We believe so. We believe so. Yeah. He was a wealthy man when he arrived there, and he was not afraid to use it.
To invest it.
To invest it. That would be a better word. Thank you. Yes. Well, it would be 834,000. Yeah.
Which one do you want?
380 pounds.
Okay.
And then how many pounds of silver was it?
2,200.
2,200?
2,200 pounds of silver.
How much an ounce?
40 an ounce.
Canadian.
30 ounce. Yeah, 30 ounce. There you go. So you're seeing what's happened. Then the people, in verse 72, and that which the rest of the people gave was 20,000 drams of gold. So they gave, so the chief of the fathers, they gave 20,380 pounds. And then the people gave another 380 pounds. So this is, and then another 2,000 pounds of silver and 67 priests' garments. So this is quite the financial investment that takes place here. So I'll leave that with you for your homework for the week. Yes?
So, help Eleanor out.
Yes.
With her H&R Block.
She's doing income tax return for the city of Jerusalem. I'm just teasing.
380 pounds of gold is worth $22.2 million.
How much?
$22.2
million. That's what it would be worth.
Now, the irony is small block Chevy engine weighs
about the same. I love it. Love it how we make connections. So we have, yeah, somewhere in the neighborhood of just over $45 million worth of gold. So.
So these 42,000 people lived in this 1 kilometer, what should I say, city of Jerusalem?
Yes.
Walled city of Jerusalem.
Walled, inside the walls, walled city of Jerusalem.
We're talking double the population of Cranbrook moving to
Harrison. Yeah.
Right?
Well.
Maybe.
Well. Cranbrook's about 30,000, is it not? Yeah, it's grown. So it's bigger than Cranbrook. It would be three times the size of Nelson. No, What do we say here for population? 42,000, so four times size of Nelson.
Well, we have 15,000.
We have 15.
Entire valley.
So like three times our valley's population. Yeah. And they're producing over $45 million worth of gold.
You'd have to take people in your house.
So that just kind of gives you a perspective here on the size of the city, the amount of the population, where we're at here. So, and so we go back to the looking at this, say Nehemiah had wisdom from above. The decisions Nehemiah made were not ones that he had much experience with. Obviously, he was a wealthy man, and he experienced with that, but this is brand new for him. Nehemiah knew leadership was important for this newly rebuilt city. Also, having the right security and the right people were important. And now we can understand why. You say, why all the security? Because they had a lot of gold, you could say on one hand. Could some of the people have been offended by all of this? I think they could have been. Yeah.
I heard today the reason why people are against the Jewish people is because everything they do is successful. And the only thing that you don't want people to do, you want them to be unsuccessful.
Okay, I'm not sure why they want people to be unsuccessful.
Well, so that you don't have to be envious of them, I guess.
And that's a funny guess. I'm sorry. But yeah, there is a hatred against the Jewish people, and finances has been one of them.
Yep, because they're successful.
Okay. When you have some time, check out how many Jews have been Nobel Peace Prize winners, and it'll surprise you, and see how God has blessed them. That's for sure. As a people, he still has his hand upon them, even though right now they're not worshiping him. They will one day. But yes, there's always been an anti-Semitism, and for many, many different reasons, one of them being money. But with these people, we see God working in their heart. The people had the wisdom to follow Nehemiah's leadership, right? And this was very important. And one of the results of them following Nehemiah's leadership, just one of them, was a great generosity. Obviously, God had worked in their hearts, and now there is this great investment. We do know there's no wisdom without God. From Psalm 119, verse 104, through thy precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. Through thy precepts I get understanding. Any other thoughts or questions here on Nehemiah chapter 7? You think about all this huge amount of money there on a small piece of land, right? Any other thoughts? Yes?
Before I was saved, one of the first messages I ever heard in Calgary.
Yes.
On Nehemiah.
Oh, okay.
And I got zero out of it. And this is amazing what I've learned in just a few weeks. I'm sure it was a good message, but there wasn't. For an unsaved person, it's absolutely useless.
Okay, I can understand that. I was going to say, I have yet to have ever heard a message out of Nehemiah that I didn't glean something from. But that's the Holy Spirit working in my life. So that's a big difference there. Nehemiah, to me, is a major character in the Bible. You say, wow, look at what was happening here. Ezra came back, and under his leadership, they rebuilt the temple. Very, very important. Under Nehemiah's leadership, you'd say, wow, they rebuilt these walls. But, you know, sometimes when we're reading about them rebuilding the walls, did you maybe think, oh, these poor people, more ways than one. But they weren't financially poor people. There's a lot happening here, and but yet their hearts are sensitive. Their hearts are willing to follow Nehemiah when he says, you know, you got to have it right. You know, we got all these people come back. What are their genealogies? Who is serving in the temple? Who are the priests? Who is in leadership here? And this is very, very important. Now we see a little bit of this just in their generosity and their giving. Any other thoughts? Yes, he did.
The ways of the Jewish people because they did not know what they were doing.
After 70 years, Zerubbabel was in that first return, was teaching them, and then some years later, Ezra comes back, starts the rebuilding of the temple, and now Nehemiah. Just as there were three captivities, to Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar, the same way there were three returns to Jerusalem. Starting with Zerubbabel, and then Ezra, and now Nehemiah. So obviously God is working in their hearts, getting them to this point. Yeah, very good. Yes?
I see God's wisdom in the organization of it afterwards. He just didn't just put it all together and hope that it worked.
Amen. That's right. God just has had his hand in there, but probably some of them were wondering. The walls are broken down, the gates are burned with fire, what's going on? But you're absolutely right, God's intervention and the wisdom that he gave. So we don't always see what's going on underneath the surface, and then there's God moving, and his sovereignty is in control. We'll pick up in chapter 8, not next week. Next week we'll have some missionaries with us, and the Bolts, they're headed to the country of Guyana. I'm sorry, losing my thoughts here. So we look forward to hearing about that, and let's continue to pray for the Jenkins as they're headed to, going to be making some changes. Obviously, they'll be working with the pastor there in the Gambia and getting him ordained, getting him set up with the leadership of that church, and we praise the Lord in God's wisdom what he did there and how great this is. Yes?
Do you know if that man that's taking over was from that church? Like, he
was
saved like 3 years?
No, he had already been saved, and he'd already had some Bible training, and then he had come to them. And now I'm trying to remember all of his background, but I'll look that back up again. I have some letters there from the Jenkins. He describes a little bit more. But yeah, he already had come to them. He was saved, had some Bible training, and then Lord brought him in. And then there was another man in those pictures as well who's also native there, and he's been very influential in helping the church as well. So he's got two solid men there, that's for sure. Some men that have already had some training and teaching. So yeah, kind of like Nehemiah had some men to set some things up and get it going. So yeah, some neat parallels, some neat ways God's moving.